Morning, counsel. Counsel for appellant, please proceed.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right, counsel, please be reminded that the time showing is your total time remaining.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court, Adam Sopko on behalf of appellant Leon Thomas. Your honors, this case is about whether the government can, after disclaiming an affirmative defense at least 16 times over nearly a decade, after vigorously litigating the underlying merits, preparing for a trial, taking an appeal before this very court in 2016, and litigating in a manner the court below described as colossally wasteful, now try to dismiss the suit on the basis of a non-jurisdictional affirmative defense. It can't. From the outset, the government has disclaimed exhaustion. It's referred to Mr. Thomas's claim as exhausted, the only exhausted claim in the action, properly exhausted, and other similar conclusions. Had the government timely asserted exhaustion before Mr. Thomas's statute of limitations ran in February 2014, he could have voluntarily dismissed the suit, refiled the same complaint word for word that very day, and this suit would have moved forward to the merits. Indeed, this is—
Mr. Sopko, go ahead, Judge Hunsaker.
So it seems undisputed that your client didn't exhaust before he filed his lawsuit. So what's your best argument for getting around that? Because the government does assert failure to exhaust as an affirmative defense in its pleadings. And I understand that you are looking at the course of the litigation. What's your best argument?
So this court's cases are clear that placing an affirmative defense in your answer is not sufficient to survive waiver. So it is true that the government did place failure to exhaust in their answer. But that is not sufficient to survive waiver. And it is certainly not asserting an affirmative defense when you place it in your answer and then disclaim it 16 times. That's waiving it, particularly when you consider the fact that the government had all the evidence that it needed to assert waiver at the outset of this litigation. Now, for waiver, this court looks at a litigant's words and actions to see if it's inconsistent with that affirmative defense. And that is absolutely the case here. Consider their conduct, their words alone, which words alone are sufficient for waiver. They referred to Mr. Thomas's claim here as exhausted, properly exhausted, the only exhausted claim at least 16 times over a near decade. That clearly—
Well, his claim was ultimately exhausted.
That's correct, but that is, Your Honor, but that is not a qualifier.
The question before us is whether his suit was premature.
Respectfully, Your Honor, that's not the question before the court. The question before the court today is whether the government waived or should be a stop from asserting the affirmative defense, and that is absolutely the case.
Did you argue waiver before the district court?
We did, Your Honor. If you look, for example, at docket number 238, which is the government's reply brief for its motion for judgment on the pleadings, page one, they refer to our argument by name as waiver several instances. And we made that argument in our briefing below, and the court recognized it below. This court does not require magic words, but just so long as the thrust of the argument was asserted below, it's preserved for appeal. And we absolutely did that here.
So, counsel, if we conclude that waiver was not raised in the district court in 2019, do you lose that argument?
If we
conclude that your client didn't argue that the government waived its ability to assert failure to exhaust as a defense in 2019 in the district court when the government first asserts it affirmatively, do you lose that argument?
The government waited a decade to assert exhaustion, so we hadn't argued that it waived the defense before because the government said had not even contemplated asserting exhaustion. Quite the contrary, they asked the district court to put a trial date on the calendar. They engaged in extensive discovery. They aligned witnesses, and all of that is consistent with a waiver of an affirmative defense. And if you push aside their words, just the 16 times that they said that this claim was exhausted or properly exhausted, and look just at their conduct, the outcome is the same, which is that they waived this. And that is consistent with this court's waiver cases. Now, consider their conduct here, just aside from their words. That is asking the court below to set a trial date, engaging in extensive discovery, drafting motions in limine, preparing their witnesses. That is entirely inconsistent then with raising a non-jurisdictional affirmative defense. And that is sufficient for waiver. That is clearly shows that the government has abandoned this affirmative defense and has relinquished it. Now, in addition to waiver, the government's conduct also requires that it be stopped from raising this affirmative defense. Critically, because from 2010 to 2014, had the government asserted this affirmative defense, Mr. Thomas could have refiled that very same day, the identical complaint, without changing a word. But they didn't. Instead, they continue to disclaim it and continue to pursue trial preparation in the court below.
Mr. Sandor, let me, that raises a question in my mind that probably has nothing to do with our decision in this case, but just a matter of curiosity more than anything else. I know that the original complaint was filed pro se, and it's certainly understandable that a pro se party might not fully appreciate the nuances of administrative exhaustion and timing and all of that. But at some point, Mr. Thomas was represented by counsel, and represented by counsel that got a hold of the file, took a look at the file, read the papers in the file, and filed an amended complaint. The question in my mind is, why didn't counsel at that time refile, given the fact that it was plainly obvious to anybody that took a look at the file that the complaint was filed before the administrative claim was exhausted?
So two points on that, Your Honor. First, we took the government at its word. The government was unequivocal. This claim is exhausted, properly exhausted, the only exhausted claim in its suit, and its actions only support that. Asking for a trial date, drafting motions in limine, et cetera.
So knowing that there was a technical defect, and it's a serious technical defect because the statute makes it absolutely clear that for a suit like this to go forward, the administrative claim must have been exhausted. There's no question about that. But to just sort of let that sit there and say, well, let's take a chance that the government doesn't pursue this. Government did file the affirmative defense. It just strikes me odd. Let me ask you this question. Was there anything in the record to suggest that there was any reason why the complaint couldn't have been refiled rather than amended?
Well, the court asked Mr. Thomas to refile an amended complaint, which he did in July 2010.
Yeah, but I'm talking about refiling a suit to obviate the problem with the failure to exhaust.
The failure to exhaust falls squarely on the defendants and to raise and assert. And from the outset, they've done the...
But the defendants did raise that. So the question I have, is there anything that in this record to indicate that Mr. Thomas was in any way prevented from refiling at a time when he could refile to obviate the problem?
Other than the government disclaiming this 16 times over a decade and pursuing trial, there was nothing that precluded him from doing so, other than...
Well, you're saying the government disclaimed. That's a little strong. And I'm not sure the record would support that.
Your Honor, they've referred to this claim as exhausted, properly exhausted, the only exhausted claim. And this is a binary issue. It's either exhausted or not. And they characterize this from the outset as exhausted. That is absolutely a disclaimer.
It's certainly a fact, though, that it was exhausted. It's just the timing was exhausted too late.
which is... which is context that the government has not provided. They've referred to this as properly exhausted, not ultimately exhausted or anything of the like, despite them making that representation in the brief. They did not do that for the preceding decade. Instead, they set an expectation in Mr. Thomas that he's relied upon to his detriment. And that is a textbook instance to apply estoppel. Now, to apply estoppel against the government, there are six factors, and all of those factors are satisfied here. First, the government absolutely knew that Mr. Thomas had not exhausted. This court says as much when the scheme at issue or the regime is of the government's design and in their sole control, and they have access to all relevant documents that flow from that. This court's concluded as much in many cases in the instance of estoppel. Wharton on page 412, Williford on page 872, they absolutely knew. The government cannot claim ignorance when the documents needed for the first factor of estoppel flow from something of their design. That's Williford, specifically page 872. Second, Mr. Thomas had the right to rely on the government's conduct. It can't be when you litigate against the government that you cannot take it at its word. That cannot be the case. The government disclaimed exhaustion 16 times, pushed the judge below to set a trial date, and actively prepared for trial. That absolutely suggests that the government was ready to go to trial, and Mr. Thomas relied on that. Third, Mr. Thomas had no idea that after all of that, the government would, particularly after the statute of limitations had elapsed, turn face and then finally assert exhaustion after disclaiming it 16 times. Because of course he had no idea that the government was going to do that. Now, the government advances a different application of this factor in their brief, but the outcome is the same, which is that it's satisfied. They apply, under their application, they ask whether Mr. Thomas knew he had exhausted. But this court has held, under that form of the third estoppel factor, when it implicates a system or regime of the government's design and under their sole control, the court cannot, for the purposes of estoppel, impute constructive knowledge to the plaintiff. That's Williford, that's Brandt, among others that we cite in our brief. Fourth, Mr. Thomas clearly relied to his detriment. The statute of limitations has elapsed, and he could have refiled but for the government's representations otherwise. And they're only now raising it after the limitations period has elapsed, foreclosing his ability to vindicate constitutional violations. That is irreparable prejudice because of the government's conduct. Fifth, the government's at least 16 statements disclaiming exhaustion is a clear pattern of affirmative misconduct. It must be that when they state at least 16 times that is a clear pattern of misrepresentations. And the case is supported. If you look at Watkins, there were at least three instances. In Johnson versus Williford, there were eight. We're well past that. And so, too, there is no harm to the public's interest here. Rather, stopping the government says that the government must deal fairly with parties in litigation. And that is a notion that's animated the application of estoppel in numerous cases. Watkins, Williford, Brandt, Wharton, and it should do the same here. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time, please.
All right, counsel. We'll hear from the state.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Assistant United States Attorney Jessica Che on behalf of Bradley Jurgensen. Your Honors, despite readily acknowledging that he did not complete the statutorily mandated exhaustion process before bringing his complaint to the district court, Thomas nevertheless urges this court to reverse the entry of judgment in Jurgensen's favor based on various equitable doctrines that either don't apply in this context, were not properly presented to the district court, or simply fail on the merits. First, because Thomas didn't properly present his arguments related to waiver, forfeiture, and estoppel, arguments that he relies on heavily, if not exclusively, this morning, the district court had no occasion to consider them, and this court should decline to do so on first view. Because these arguments also fail on the merits, the court should reject them in any event. Secondly, and as he readily concedes, Thomas identified no authority that would allow for the novel application of latches against a defendant as opposed to against a plaintiff as an affirmative defense. And latches was an argument that he presented to the district court. Indeed, this court and other courts have construed latches as an equitable affirmative defense that can be applied against plaintiffs but that cannot bar affirmative defenses raised by defendants in the absence of some affirmative relief sought, such as a counterclaim or a cross-claim. And finally, the district court also correctly concluded that the issue of whether Thomas properly exhausted his administrative remedies is a legal conclusion that cannot form the basis of a judicial admission, which was the other argument that he properly raised in the district court that he doesn't mention today, which would have the effect of withdrawing a fact from issue. So for these reasons, we would ask that the court affirm the entry of judgment in favor of Jurgensen.
So counsel, go ahead, Judge.
Why did the government wait so long to do this?
Your Honor, the timing of the motion was regrettable, and the...
It's more than regrettable. It caused an incredible waste of time, energy, and in this case, it foreclosed Mr. Thomas's ability to refile.
Well, I would note, Your Honor, and this was a point that you touched on earlier with my colleague, was that as of the time that Mr. Thomas filed his second amended complaint and Jurgensen filed his responsive pleading to that operative second amended complaint in December 2012, he had counsel at that point.
Jurgensen had counsel throughout, correct?
He did indeed, Your Honor. But the point I'm trying to make is that by Mr. Thomas's own calculation of when the statute of limitations expired, his counsel had over a year after receiving Jurgensen's answer to the second amended complaint to look into look at the case and confirm upon viewing that failure to properly exhaust was an affirmative defense, that all claims that Mr. Thomas was presenting to the court had complied with the pre-suit exhaustion requirement. So that's...
I think there's, you know, there's ample blame on both sides of this case. And, you know, as I, in my colloquy with Mr. Sopko, I'm troubled as to why Mr. Thomas simply didn't refile way back when he first had counsel. But nonetheless, you know, the government sat on this thing and sat on it for years and litigated and actively litigated forward, getting ready on the eve of trial springs this. I mean, what was it that all of a sudden possessed the government to come to the conclusion that they had to take this drastic action?
Well, I can't speak to the litigation strategies that occurred in the district court, but I will note that just to follow up on the point that I was making earlier, that was that Mr. Thomas was in fact aware that he had not completed the exhaustion requirement at the time that he brought his complaint.
Yeah, so but the government could have waived it. The government could have waived it on there. You were on the eve of trial. Everybody's ready to go. This man simply wants his day in court. We don't know whether he'll win or lose, but he just wants his day in court. And yes, there was a technical violation. Yes, there was a failure to exhaust. Yes, under the statute, that's a serious question. And in fact, it may very well be that the district court's analysis of all the various factors, waiver, forfeiture, estoppel, et cetera, perhaps those are correct. I'm just very troubled as to why the government would do this and why the government itself just simply didn't waive to give this man his day in court.
Well, Your Honor, I would point out that the district court did not make any findings as to waiver, forfeiture, or estoppel because those arguments simply weren't fleshed out to the district court.
I'm aware of that. I'm just referring to the arguments that were presented in the briefs, but I'm fully aware of that. But the question I'm getting at is I'm still troubled by the fact that somehow the United States government decides that No, no, we're going to rely on this question and deny this man his day in court.
Well, I certainly don't understand
why you didn't simply waive it, move on, give him his day in court and be done with it.
Well, assuming waiver had properly been presented to the district court, I don't think that Mr. Thomas satisfies the standard required for waiver. And I think that this court's decision in the Morrison versus Mahoney case is instructive in that regard, because that was a case in which this court rejected the notion that the government, in that case, it was the state, was precluded from raising on remand a point that was not reached earlier when the state had prevailed previously on a different issue. Here, the facts, the record unequivocally reflects that Bradley Jurgensen twice and timely pled failure to properly exhaust in response to Mr. Thomas's first and operative Second Amendment complaints, and that the
counsel, you didn't pursue that though. You pled it, but didn't pursue it further.
We did pursue it in the motion for summary judgment that is before this court today, Your Honor. And that
in the interim, you did not pursue it.
Well, it's a situation that's somewhat similar to the situation that was at issue in the Morrison case.
We've talked a couple of times about how this case was on the verge of trial, and then the government comes up with this argument, advances this argument in 2019. But this case was on the verge of trial before several years earlier in 2015, and motions in limine were filed. And in those motions in limine, the government specifically says, this trial will be defined by the scope of this one grievance that was filed against Jurgensen that has been exhausted. I mean, the government is affirmatively telling the trial court that this case is going to be governed by this one issue that was fully exhausted. And if waiver is all about conduct that is inconsistent with advancing a defense that is available, I don't see how it is that the government can say you didn't engage in conduct that's contrary to asserting failure to exhaust.
Well, I would, and I agree again that the timing of the motion is unfortunate, but I go back to the point, to a point that Judge Lynn made earlier, was that the question was never whether the claim was exhausted. That is not what is at issue. The claim, the issue is whether that exhaustion took place prior to Mr. Thomas bringing this complaint.
So here's the quote from the motion in limine. Plaintiffs exhausted AR-566-304, which is the grievance we're talking about. Plaintiffs exhausted grievance now defines the scope of plaintiff's action at trial. That says more than it eventually got exhausted. You're telling the court that we're going to trial and this is what our trial will be about and only this.
Yes, Your Honor. And if that motion in limine had been ruled upon and that position had been accepted by the district court, then I agree that it could be a problem. But that never happened.
That informs waiver, because that's the government taking a position that's contrary to saying we don't have to go to trial at all because this case was never exhausted. I mean, the government took a contrary position.
Well, I don't think it's contrary to the extent that every time the government asserted that exhaustion had been completed, it attached documentation and specifically the Office of General Counsel's April 28th, 2010 final appeal decision, which clearly indicates the date that was exhausted. So nothing in those representations was actually untrue. The question is whether or not Mr. Thomas completed the statutorily mandated exhaustion process prior to tendering his complaint to the district court. And the answer to that is no.
But counsel, if that was really your position, you would not have moved forward toward trial. You would have moved to dismiss the case for failure to exhaust.
That might very well be, Your Honor. And to the extent that there was any oversight, that doesn't inform the question of whether Bradley Jurgensen waived his entitlement to assert this affirmative defense. It was still brought in a motion for summary judgment that was in advance of any trial on the merits. So if we, by contrast, were in a position where we had gone to trial and there had been a judgment at the end of that trial, I think that we would be in a very different posture, but that's simply not what happened. That's not what happened. What happened was Mr. Jurgensen pled his affirmative defense to the operative complaint and later raised it in a motion for summary judgment. So
counsel, in terms of this matter not being addressed in the district court on de novo review as an issue of law, we may consider it. Would you agree?
I think that the court may consider it, but I think that it should decline to do so to the extent that the district court was not given an opportunity to consider these arguments.
But on de novo review, we can consider it just as well as the district court could. If there is no additional evidence, this is strictly a matter of law. There's nothing else that needs to be done to frame the issue for us. So why wouldn't we be able to make the call?
I think that the court could, Your Honor, but I think that in light of the Morrison decision, that Mr. Thomas cannot satisfy the elements of either explicit or implicit waiver. Morrison was a case that also involved a government entity asserting, although here I would remind the court that this is an individual capacity Bivens defendant, that asserted an affirmative defense on remand after it had argued a different argument in a motion to dismiss. Now that motion to dismiss was the subject of appeal. When it came back on remand, the government explicitly waived that defense and then asserted a different affirmative defense in the answer. And in response to the petitioner's arguments that the government had waived its ability to contest timeliness, which was the particular affirmative defense at issue in that case, this court specifically stated that it rejected that notion that a party is precluded from raising on remand a point that was not reached before when the same party prevailed earlier. And that's what we have here, Your Honor. Notwithstanding the fact that I appreciate that the litigation history is extremely lengthy and that the timing of the motion is unfortunate, the question is whether or not Bradley Jurgensen was entitled to assert this affirmative defense, and of course he was. So unless the court has further questions for me, we would respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's entry of judgment in favor of Mr. Jurgensen.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. So we did preserve our arguments below. Docket number 237, pages 2-4, docket number 238, page 1. The government refers to our argument as waiver numerous times. Not like waiver, waiver. The court captured our waiver argument on page 7 of the opinion. Similar with estoppel, ER, pages 28 to 29, Judge Bernal asked us, are you making an estoppel argument? We answered unequivocally, yes. Opinion on page 7 mentions estoppel. Our arguments are absolutely preserved to make before you this morning that the government has waived this affirmative defense and that they should be stopped from asserting it as well. Second, my friend on the other side is trying to draw a false distinction. There are two types of claims, exhausted and unexhausted. They're trying to draw this distinction between properly exhausted, maybe exhausted. It's exhausted or unexhausted. And they said exhausted time and again for nearly a decade. To the extent that there is a distinction, they said properly exhausted. So this distinction that they're drawing does nothing to justify their conduct. And finally, Mr. Thomas didn't dismiss and refile because he took the government at its word. The government clearly showed that it was ready to move to trial, not just for a year or concentrated in one hearing or in one filing. They did this across numerous filings, across numerous years, and across numerous attorneys. The message was clear. We're ready to go to trial against you and to litigate on the merits. Mr. Thomas and counsel below trusted that. And now the government is taking that expectation and turning that against him to deny him his day in court. That is not allowed under this court's precedence in estoppel and in waiver. Respectfully, right. Your Honors, we ask that the decision below be vacated and remanded so that both parties can move forward to the trial that they've been actively preparing for several years. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. On behalf of the court, we would like to thank the supervising attorney and Mr. Sopko from Northwestern University for your representation of this plaintiff.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case just argued will be submitted for decision by the court. Our final case on calendar for argument is LC versus Altaloma School District.